Welcome to China for those who are visitors, and welcome, of course, to my year 12. I think you've been placed strategically in certain areas. I'm not sure why. It must be a geography thing. And as an historian, I don't get it, but there you go. Thank you. And I'm very, very pleased to have Professor Danny Dorling here with us. I'm going to give you a little blurb, a little bit of background. So you're probably aware he's a professor in geography at Oxford. He was at Sheffield previous to that. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then there's a long list. And his degree, geography, mathematics, and statistics. I think the statistics bit will become very obvious, won't it, mm-hmm. From the slides. His work, really, housing, health, employment, education, poverty, you name it. A fascinating man, I'm allowed to say that, I think. And the topic today, and I hope I've got this right, is everything still rising but slowing down apart from the temperature. So could you please, by the way, we might have other guests come in typical fashion. UCS is late. So I'm allowed to say that, as you know. This is where I used to work. So I will go and grab them. But could you please give Professor Danny Dorling a very warm welcome?
Thank you ever so much. The reason I moved you all around was just for fun. But if you've ever seen a population cartogram, which is where population density is even, what you just did, if you did it more diligently, is how one of those things is created. So if we had an hour, I'd get you to talk to the person to the left and the right of you, and if the person to the left or the right lived further west or east, you'd swap places. You'd then be perfectly aligned that way, and then you do the same thing with people behind and in front of you, and eventually you'd form a map of where you are from. But you can do this for any group, anywhere, and it gives you an idea of who you're actually talking to. So I now know which boroughs you're from. The bad news is you're not going to get any maps. You're going to get a ridiculous number of graphs, because I gave Jennifer an option between the exciting political talk and the more boring science talk. You're going to get the more boring science talk. But it's not that boring, and the reason it's not that boring is we got some news on Monday. Every 2 years, the United Nations publishes the estimates for the future world population of the planet. And what they published this Monday, 17th of June, was that something had changed as far as they were concerned. I should put my glasses on so I can see what you're seeing. And it might look to you very trivial. They said that by 2050, it's just 31 years away, the world population will be 9.7 billion, whereas the day before we thought it'd be 9.8 billion. So only 100 million people. You might think it doesn't matter very much. But for going forward to 2100, a few of you, no, maybe you will make it. Only the women, I'm afraid. We'll be at 10.9 billion rather than 11.2. And here's the exciting thing. For the first time ever in the history of the human species, I really hope you're from just above the Thames. Anyway, we'll let you off this, you're fine. For the first time ever in the history of human beings, world population is going to reduce. It's going to slow. It's almost certain. It's the first drop not caused by famine, pandemic, war, disease. It's happening because people are having fewer babies, and it looks permanent. And the implications of this are absolutely massive, including that we might survive as a species. So I'm just trying to get you to forgive me for the fact that I've just whipped together loads of things produced in the last week on this. If you want to read a book on it, the book Empty Planet is pretty good. It was published in January or February. It's American, so it says some things which you read it and go, oh, don't be so silly. But it's a book saying the United Nations have got it wrong. And they published it before the UN results came out, and the UN results had changed. Only slightly, but enough. And it's changing. The big, big change is because women are getting to choose how many children they have. Men on average in the world want to have half a child more than the average woman wants. If women get to choose, you end up with a rapid deceleration of population growth. Lots more text. They leave with a normal kind of thing. Normal kind of thing is India's expected to become the largest country. In very few years it'll overtake China. It's not actually growing that fast now, India. I'll show you a bit later. And then the other countries which are going to grow the most, Nigeria, Pakistan, DRC, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Indonesia, Egypt, and, notice this, United States of America. The United States of America is a really odd country. It's the only country in the rich world where people were still, until recently, having slightly more than two children per couple. Everywhere else, the whole of Europe, for decades, has been below two children. If it wasn't for immigration, we'd be empty. And we have no future at all without immigration. There are parts of Europe where it's near to one child. That's a halving in a generation. We're the most like America country in Europe. So sometimes we've touched 1.8, 1.9 children per couple. But we're getting slightly back towards normal again. If you destroy a society, if you make it so that the welfare state's falling apart and there's kind of no future, people tend to have more children because they're a guarantee. One of them might look after you when you're old. When you have a welfare state, when you've got some stability, when you think you know what's happening, you're more likely to have fewer children. Who here is an only child? Stick your hands up. Right, you're going to become normal in future. Okay? In that most people in this country who are being born now will be only children. Who's got one sibling, one brother or sister? There we go, that's normal now. Isn't that funny? Two child norm. Well, I know it gets complicated with step everything. Who's got two siblings? Right, you'll be a rarity in the future. Who's got three? Actually, it's me. Okay, have we got any fours? Okay, a couple. Right, there won't be anybody like you. People will want to talk to you about what was it like having to share, that kind of thing. And you could play this game, if we had more time, with how many siblings your parents had and how many your grandparents have. And you get an idea of how the thing is moving down. And the UN, this is the first time they've ever kind of admitted to it. 27 countries have had a drop of 1% already in their populations. I'll let you skim read the rest of it. The most advanced places around the world, places like Shanghai, places like Hong Kong, you really are down to one. So these cities rely on people coming in to keep their population size up. London's pretty low now. People say they can't afford to have a child. First graph. How many of you are doing A-level maths, by the way? Right, I've got a challenge for all of you. The others could try it. You could produce this graph really, really easily, right? You just go to the UN, it's called Population Prospects. Just remember the word Population Prospects, UN Population Prospects website. Click on it and you can download the data. Individual year data. It's called, this is the number of 18-year-olds in the world. So way back in 1950, there were about 45 million. Almost 50 million. A little bit of an increase, little dip, all to do with how many were born 18 years earlier, because they're 18-year-olds. And well, hey, look, we're taking off, because we had a baby boom just after the Second World War. Because when you have a war, that creates more babies. All bad things create extra babies. Because people panic. They don't know what to do. They don't have the babies during the war, but they have the babies straight after the war. They partly have the babies because they weren't able to have a baby during the war, but also it's a natural human thing to do when you're disrupted. So in refugee camps, people have lots of babies. when there is famine and disaster, people have lots of babies. When there's stability, it slows down. Anyway, let's speed up. So me, I was 18 in 1986, so I was one of 80 million people in the world who were 18. And you see it's kind of going up and up and up, slows down a bit, goes up, and here's the prediction. That's the UN prediction. It's going to be around about 130 million going down at the end. That's not going to happen. That is the official world projection. It's not going to happen, because what will happen is something that looks a bit more like this, because that's what has happened, and the future will obviously be a bit wiggly. It's just we don't know exactly what wiggles it'll be. Right, if you remember that graph, we've got another that's a bit like that. Here's John. John's a very nice man. John's the head of demography for the planet. John works on a particular floor in a big skyscraper in New York. And this is John kind of covering his back. John's a little bit embarrassed because in 2017, 2015 and 2013, John was telling us, oh, it's going up, there's going to be more than 11 billion people. John, who's kept this job for a long time, in 2011, John said it was 10 something billion. But then John and his colleagues panicked. And they panicked because they saw some more babies, and oop, we go from 10 to 11 billion. And here you can see John kind of saying, we don't really know. But he does, because the number of babies are coming down. Fertility. So it's the word we use for the number of kids people have. Not just falling. It's falling faster and faster and faster and faster than we predicted and faster than ever before. It's women going to schools, going to secondary schools, women going to university. The best comprehensive contraceptive ever invented on the planet is going to university. Right. Young women tend not to have babies when they're at university. And then they get the idea in their head that they might have a career, and the next thing you know, they don't have a baby until their 30s or not at all. About a quarter of people in rich countries like this one don't have a child. Half of them have chosen not to have a child. Half of them find out by the time that they're 42, 43, 44 that they can't. But about a quarter of you who are female in the room won't have a child. Men, there's a slightly greater variability, because some of you will have two or more partners with which you have children. And for every one of you that does that, somebody else won't. Let's skip over them. Why is the population of the world going up so much when the babies are falling down and down and down, and well over half the planet is now below 2.1 children. The main reason that we're going from wherever we are now, heading towards 7 billion people, to 8, to 9, to 10, is not more children. The main reason is that people are living longer. If you imagine everybody living in a world where you only live to age 40 on average, if you increase that to age 80, you actually double the population of the planet at any one time without the need for any more births. So the main reason that we're going up to higher numbers is people not dying at the rate that they used to die. It's really, really good news. Right, this is the second and last graph. Right, you can only draw these graphs since Monday. Nobody else draws them. It's exactly the same, it's 18-year-olds. But instead of showing you the number of 18-year-olds in every year, I've just taken one away from the other, and it's a change. So how much was the number of 18-year-olds in 1951 compared to 1952? And it was about a third of a million more. See, little rise, little fall, little rise, little fall, little rise, little fall, little rise, little big fall, small rise. Those are baby booms. You can see them. You just take the UN data, you work out the change each year, you draw a graph, and you can see when a whole load of people in the world were having many babies or fewer babies. And the main reason that people have lots of babies is that lots of people were born, well, 16 or 18 or 20 or 25 years ago to have the babies. That gap's getting wider. This, if you look at it, it's kind of coming down. Here's the prediction. Right, we're here now, so we're here, did they write? We're here now. This bit they've got right. And the reason they've got this bit right is we're talking about 18-year-olds. And for the next 18 years, we know pretty exactly how many 18-year-olds are going to be. Because they've already been born. The only thing we don't know, and it is a bit sad, is the ones who are going to die. But we've got a rough idea of the proportion. What's the most dangerous thing that affects you in this town, just in case you don't know? Go on. Traffic. Even in London, where you're bloody lucky because it goes slowly, so you have some of the best traffic accident rates in the country, the most likely thing between age 4 and 25 to kill you is a car. One piece of information I've given you this afternoon that's useful to remember. Right, you can forget about everything else. You've gone past the age when your mum and dad used to worry about you choking on something. Swimming pools are a bit dodgy, particularly if you go overseas to Ibiza and get drunk with your friends in a couple of years' time. Right, watch out for the swimming pools, but otherwise it's cars. Anyway, that's why we know about the number of 18-year-olds to come, because they've been born. And then what are the UN playing at? They're not even guessing. Okay, that's the future predictions. They're not kind of having to go and guessing. There's nothing there. I'm hoping I've kept the A-level maths people slightly engaged. I do realise the rest of you are going to glaze over, so we go faster. Why do I get excited about this? Because 6 years ago I wrote a book called Population 10 Billion. And really annoyingly, the book was published on the very day when the United Nations decided it wasn't going to be 10 billion that we're going to, it's going to be 11, which was a bit embarrassing. So I'm kind of glad that they're heading back down towards 10 now. Here's the key graph over time. And these are some old graphs, and then we'll do something much more new. 1820 to 2000, this is world population growth. We have about a billion people here. Here we're expecting 10, not 11 billion anymore. Population growth was really, really low for most of the history of our species, just above zero. It comes down 1820, 1830, 1840, 1850 in the world, because that's what happens if you go into Africa and take people and put them into ships and ship them over the Atlantic. It's a very short answer. The nearest equivalent of that before was when some Portuguese and Spanish people turned up on the Hispaniola with their germs, and 60 million people in South America died. Okay, you get these occasional massive disasters. That was 1492. But since 1850, the rate of population growth in the world has accelerated. So it's going up. By 1880, by 0.5% a year. By 1910, by almost 1% a year. By, I'll skip through, that's the First World War, economic crash, Second World War. Round about 1968, 69, 2% a year. 2% growth is game over. 2% growth, if it carries on for 100 years, the planet's completely full. So in 1968, somebody wrote a book called The Population Bomb. And people really panicked about population. We're still seeing a kind of echo of that panic now. So geography textbooks still tell you there are too many people. They're kind of wrong, but it's understandable where the panic came from. And when we get students who come up at Oxford, we ask them one question. We ask them, what's the ideal population of the world? I don't know. Then if you want to tell me, because they give us this number. Anybody want to shout? Because I'd love to know where the number comes from. No, for some reason they say 5 billion. I've still got to find out where 5 billion comes from. It's a kind of panic. Anyway, there was an enormous famine in China, partly state engineered, mainly accidental, and then this happens. And that stops at 2000, and what's happened since then has just carried on. And when we get here, and here's anywhere from 2050 through to 2090, that line hits that axis and the species begins to reduce in size for the first time. Charles Darwin, nice old man. there's a real irony that Charles Darwin was writing about the origin of species, and in this quote he was writing about favoured seasons. He was talking about elephants. What happens to the population of elephants when you get a few seasons, when the food that elephants eat is really abundant? And he was talking about population explosions. But you get population explosions very occasionally in all kinds of species. We've just had a population explosion. You're the product of the end of a population explosion. You don't go from 1 billion to 10 billion people. We haven't really had one before. We had a kind of increase with the Neolithic Revolution, but it was very slow, and there were many, many Neolithic revolutions, and sometimes people went back to hunter-gathering and then started farming again. And it happened over 20, 30, 40 generations. This thing that you're at the end of, which to you feels normal, is completely new on a planetary basis. Here's the fertility figures for different continents. They're all coming down to no change, apart from Africa, which was slightly higher way back in the 1980s. And we're just discovering why it was, because the real change that's happened is that fertility in Africa has come down faster than we thought it would. And I'm hoping, there you go. Paper published earlier this year, and it looks like we discovered why the population in Africa wasn't reducing as fast as it should have been. And it's a bit of a shameful reason. During the 1980s, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank instigated a thing called structural adjustment on Africa, and tried to make people in Africa pay back debts which we had given them. We'd lent money and then we said, you've got to give it back. And as a result of all the cuts and austerity we imposed on Africa, growth went negative. They stopped doing things like sending girls to secondary school. And if you stop sending girls to secondary school, they have more babies. So the population boom in Africa appears most likely to have been caused by policy of the United States and Europe. So whenever you hear anybody say that there's too many people going to be in Africa, you've got to remember who it was who actually led to that. Anyway, the really good news is most structural adjustment has ended. There was debt forgiveness around the millennium with the Jubilee, and almost all girls on the continent of Africa in the poorest countries are now in schools and they're not having babies, and more are going to university. The majority of university graduates in the world are female now. Too much text. Right. That's the last bit about robots and AI, if you're getting bored of this. Now, I have 200 graphs of different things, and I'm not going to show you them. Because you remember the title of this was about everything slowing down? Now, a few things aren't. The number of air passengers in the world isn't slowing down. The number of people flying isn't. Although most people in the world will never fly. And most people don't. So let's do it. How many of you have never flown? You're not going to admit if you've never flown. Okay, what we're due now, so let's just do it from December. How many of you have not flown since December this year? It's just under half. How many have flown once since December? How many have flown twice? It'll be three times? Four times? Who's got a private jet? No, okay. Yeah, but the distribution of flying is incredibly skewed. A few people fly very, very often. Most people in the world, in fact, even most people in Britain don't fly at all. The majority of people on EasyJet, you know the really cheap Ryanair? They're social class A, B, C, 1. Anyway, that was just to give you enough time to read that if you like reading things. Here's the same graphs I showed you, but from 6 years ago. So I've shown you the graphs you could only make this week, and I'm going to show you them again. This is the change, and it's more obvious now. This is total population, not just 18-year-olds. And the point is, it's doing that. Can you see? I won't go into detail, but essentially it's doing that. Those are the UN predictions. They look wrong. You take that. This is the kind of thing I get paid to do, and it isn't any more complicated than this. I take that, which is a change for 3 years in the number of people. Big increase there in the 70s, extra 4 million people a year. big decrease around the millennium. And I just draw a squiggly line on it, right? Very scientific. I say, it looks to me like what it's going to do in future is this. And then because people don't believe squiggly lines, I take the actual line to the past and replicate it, right? And then it looks a bit more scientific, but it isn't. And if you were to do that, if that were to happen, then by the end of the century, we're 7.4 billion people. And that's entirely possible. Tiny, tiny changes in the behaviour of people right now. If we manage not to have a world war for the next 30 years, if we manage to have some kind of economic stability in the world, if we manage to avoid a really bad flu pandemic, if we manage to spread secondary education to everybody who doesn't get it, if we manage to spread universities around the planet because they're the best contraceptive ever, if you manage to give people an idea that they're going to get a pension so they don't need to have, and in particular it's a daughter, because girls are more likely to look after their parents than boys traditionally. If you manage to do all these things, you could be 7.4 billion people. What actually happens will depend. We don't know, but we do know as of Monday that things are looking more towards the low end than towards the high end. Here's the total population in billions going up to 10, and that's the graph I showed you before. So the actual number looks really smooth, but this is the thing called the first derivative. It's the change in that. Every tiny wiggle, that little wiggle there, is due to that big fall there, which is a world war. I have to mention my friend Stuart. Stuart went to Eton. And because Stuart went to Eton, he feels obliged to fly into war zones because they character build. And so I wrote this book with Stuart, and Stuart loves flying into Iraq to ask women how many babies they intend to have. Because it's not a chat up line, but anyway. If you're trying to work out what the future population of the planet's going to be, you need to know about intentions and actuality in the most disrupted parts of the world. Because in the parts of the world which are not disruptive, you've got a fairly good idea of what's happening and what's likely to happen. And there are really, really good things going on even in some of the poorest parts of the world. Other things, because I promised you in the title, but I'm only going to show you three, just to give you an idea that things are slowing down. This is Wikipedia. Wikipedia is currently on about 6 million entries. Wikipedia accelerated from when it began, 2001 to 2007. Keeps on rising, then it was under 2, so it's still going up. But it's going up more slowly. Somebody invented stubs, goes up a bit, but everything has to slow down at some point. This is books. Books produced in the Netherlands. Don't worry about all the words, it's because this gets printed in the book. And we got more and more and more books. And then we got a huge rise in books in the 50s, 60s and 70s because everybody could read in the Netherlands. There was no internet, there was no YouTube, there was hardly any telly, so you bought books. And then when you became middle class, you bought books not even to read, but to put on the shelves so that when somebody came round to your house, right, they were impressed. And actually the number of books that people were buying at some point was actually exceeding the number they really could read. But other things come along, and bang, the publishing industry is going down. We can do the same for things like water consumption, for food, all kinds of things. They're still going up, but they're slowing down. Except for overall emissions. And this is partly to kind of guilt the people flying. And the really kind of guilty thing is, once you know that most people in the world will never fly and have never flown, then you can't say, oh, but we're just a little country. We have put almost all the carbon we can get up in the air already. This country's put more carbon in the atmosphere than any other because we started burning our forest first. We had a forest, and we got all the coal out early, and so on. A gigaton. I've got to show you some graphs of a gigaton of carbon. It's the same as 100 million decaying African elephants. I don't know if this helps, but it's a lot. This is a poster produced by Asda. Asda trying to show they care. Asda is owned by Walmart. if you just look on Wikipedia and say and type in largest company in the world, the 10 largest companies are all oil companies apart from Walmart. But Walmart is essentially a giant car park with a store in it. So it's somewhere to actually drive your car to when you're burning the oil. Three graphs, just to show you that emissions go up and up and up. 35 gigatons a year by 2018. And the really sad thing at the moment is every time we have a summit, this is the Rio summit, Kyoto Accord and the Paris summit, for some reason, and there's been three now, so you begin to think there's a pattern, governments after the summit tend to take that after ball because they've done something really big by getting together and agreeing a target, and actually emissions go up faster after the summits than before. I think it's likely to change, but it's the biggest thing in the world that needs to change. Everything else is fine. We have enough water. We certainly have enough food. If we were to stop eating meat, just half of us, we're sorted. Soil degradation is a problem, but it's not an insolvable problem. You can almost forget even species extinction, which is terrible, but it's slowed down because we've killed all the little weak species off already. On a bad way of putting it. If you're worried about one thing, this is the only thing to worry about. There's a linear relationship between the amount of carbon you put in the atmosphere and the temperature. Really nice and simple. It's God decided. Look, let's make this so obvious that only Donald Trump couldn't get it. Right? Every single atom of CO2 you put in, you'll get a directly proportionate rise in global temperatures. That's it. Game over. That's why Theresa signed up last week to carbon neutral by 2050. And her reputation for the future. At the moment, the doubling is happening every 23 years. The good news is it was every 22 years before. So it's kind of slowed down by 1 year, but it's still dramatic. That's probably going to be the biggest change that you'll see in the first half of your adult lifetime. You'll almost certainly see carbon emissions slow down and not rise so much because it's just become so incredibly obvious how bad it is. I don't know why I stuck the change there, but essentially you don't have to worry about population. It's slowing down, it's going to fall, and remember, most of these people don't fly, don't have a car, don't pollute. It's us that do that. And our population isn't rising. Here's the temperature graph, and you'll be glad to see a normal graph for once. And, oh no, sorry, it's still the gigatons. Going up to the latest 3.7. Here's the temperature graphs. NASA series, Met Office series. And this is the series you get sent by climate change deniers, who say, look at this, this is satellite data, the temperature isn't rising. And it looks a bit all over the place. Here it is on a normal graph. Here's the last 10 years. Right. That's it. It's heating. You know, you're not the right age. If you just about remember 10, 11 years ago, there's much more debate about this. Nobody now says that this thing isn't boiling up. But we know what to do. It's really easy. It's just, you know, it's largely CO2, a bit of methane and some other things, but just reduce it. I'm running out of time, so I'll click through it. I get very excited about these things. The people, this is the world, this is the slowdown. You are here. That's what's happening now. That's the entire history of humanity. That is when we turned up in the Americas, 1492. That's when we went into Africa. This is much better. This isn't conquistadors and slavers and so on. This is people deciding they can use contraceptives. Very different. Here's the USA behaving in a strange kind of way, wants to build a wall. More people recently have been going from the USA to Mexico than actually from Mexico into the USA. If you remember those 10 countries at the start, the USA is the only one in the Americas which is out of control by population. And so the building of the wall thing is quite funny. Here's China. One child policy kind of comes in a vengeance then. They've relaxed it now. Chinese have got used to having one child. So that's what happens. And that's the future of China, down to a billion by 2100. Here's Africa all as a whole at the moment. And here's the UK. So I'll just tell you about the UK for 30 seconds, then zoom on. That's the potato famine in Ireland. So the biggest drop in history, so it's because Ireland was in the UK back then, the British Isles. And this is what happened recently with A8 migration. So if you think, you know, Brexit's slightly odd, something big did happen. I don't publicly show this graph much at the moment, because I want us to sort out Brexit first, and I don't really want to help Nigel. And this graph would help Nigel. But essentially, there are several periods where we've gone out and invited people in. We said we were a safe haven for people who were Jewish in 1905, and then we did an Aliens Act to try to stop them coming in. There was a health secretary called Enoch Powell, Secretary of State for Health, who went out to the Caribbean and to India to ask people to come and be nurses and bus drivers. And then a few years later, he did a Rivers of Blood speech and said it was terrible. But the top one is Tony Blair in 2003, opening up early to Eastern Europe, inviting people in. And then what do? Within a few years of inviting everybody to come, massive boasts, we go, oh, it's terrible, they've come. There's only one reason people came. It was a special invitation that was given around about 2003 that had this effect. And that's where we're going. But we're a tiny country. It's just that historically we're quite important. India, if you remember, the UN says it's going to overtake China within 10 years. Massive slowdown. Japan's already there. This is where we are now. Okay, Japan's already heading down. Only three or four more slides. And we've got about 2 or 3 minutes for questions, and that's it. And this is me being ridiculously optimistic about other things. This is GDP, and if you're very imaginative, you can draw a line from 2006 that way. And you can think that GDP might be slowing. There are lots of reports at the moment of GDP in China slowing to just 6.5% growth a year. GDP growth has been pretty flat in Europe since 2008. It's fairly flat in the US. You need GDP growth to fall. If GDP rises and rises and rises, your consumption rises, your pollution rises, and the planet burns. So the question is whether that is actually happening. You can do green growth. But in general, those periods with the fastest GDP growth are the periods of the fastest pollution. The only times that we haven't put more CO2 in the atmosphere are the big economic recessions. And we tend to say recessions are terrible. When I was your age, this is what I worried about. You got to find the 10. Remember I said I was 18 in 1986? Which is there. So pretend you didn't know about any of this, okay? In 1986, there were a group of scientists called the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. And they used to produce this statistic which says how many minutes to midnight are we? Which was how likely is an all-out nuclear war which will annihilate you. And it got to 3 minutes to midnight at that point. And if you were a teenager growing up in the 1980s, you assumed you were going to die in a nuclear war. It looked very, very likely. We were lucky, essentially, we've now discovered. There are some very good scientific work done in the late 80s and 90s, including by geographers, which helped show that everybody, 30 million people, will be dead and dying within 2 weeks of a war. It took about 10 years for that to get through the heads of the politicians. In 1992, John Major secretly got rid of all the secret nuclear bunkers in the country, because it's pointless having them. Because the last thing you want to be is down a bunker and walk out into that, because you're still going to die. And here's the decommissioning of nuclear weapons. Now, we've still got far too many nuclear weapons, but that's happened. This is kind of, you're not looking that uplifted, and it's a Friday. But if you can do that with nuclear weapons, think what you could actually do with emissions. Then they are mostly not necessary, they don't make people happier. The average holiday that people go on in an aeroplane, it has a zero net happiness add to you. You think that flying to the Mediterranean this summer is going to make you happy. Your mum and dad think that flying to the Mediterranean is going to make them happy. And sometimes it will, but odds on, you'll have an argument in Gatwick, the plane will be delayed, you'll get to the villa. At that point they'll tell you how ungrateful you are, because you're saying how you want to be back here in London with your friends, because why on earth do you want to be with them? You might get sunburned, it might go okay, you eventually come back, fly back and so on. Right? Holidays are slightly overrated, except for people who can't have any, and then they're the most wonderful thing ever. But multiple holidays, going skiing twice at Christmas and so on, it's the fastest way to break your legs and break your back. And that's part of how we're going to get emissions down, is some realising that some of the things we do that are very polluting aren't even that useful for us. Here's my last graph, just over how much things can change. You could draw these graphs for anything. This is the 2017 general election, and it's the popularity of Labour, because we had... Now, people from Islington were all claiming that none of them are from Corbyn's seat. Have we got anybody from Corbyn's seat? Way! We got three, okay. Jeremy Corbyn, useless man, becomes leader of the party, 2015, didn't want to stand, only ends up getting it because at the last minute two MPs within 2 seconds of midnight vote for him and he can go through to the ballot, which he then wins. But he mutters, he can't do a speech at all. He never wanted to be leader. Labour was sitting on about 33% of the vote. And it goes up a bit of a boost and so on, but down and down and down. Second leadership election, he wins it, which wasn't the idea of the party, but he's plummeted down to 27% by about February 2017. At which point the officials who are around Theresa May takes advice from her officials. She did a degree in a very good department in Oxford. We've got two of them. We have not just Theresa, we have Catherine Blakelock. Who knows who Catherine Blakelock is? Read Christchurch, read geography in Christchurch, Oxford. I'm glad you don't know. Catherine Blakelock last year set up the Brexit Party. We only have 86 students a year, right? And we had less back then. No. What is the chance of two of them? And even the worst thing if you're a geographer, Jeremy Corbyn's first job? He was a geography teacher in Jamaica, anyway. So I'm really happy about the leadership contest, because none of them are geographers, and they are all going to fall on it. Whoever gets it is going to do so badly, and we're going to go, oh, if you've been a geographer. Anyway, so we've got Jeremy Corbyn, first geography teacher, versus Theresa May, geography pupil. Jeremy's down on 27%. Theresa's officials say to her, you have to call an election, because nobody has ever lost an election at this point. She calls an election, turns out she can't speak as well as he can't speak. He finally learns how to speak because he does 130 public rallies, which is what you have to do. And this thing is the biggest, fastest swing in the vote ever in British history. And in the election, Theresa has to form an alliance with the DUP. And the rest is kind of history. So you can look at these kind of trends. This was the most exciting trend in British history of voting until the bloody Brexit Party, which managed to get an even bigger, faster one. Except they got it from UKIP and the Conservatives. So the European elections a few weeks ago, Conservatives, UKIP and Brexit Party actually lost 11 seats overall. All these things are connected. They're all connected to population growth, to pollution, to what people think matters, and what's changing around the world. I'm obviously extremely weird and nerdy. Some of you will be. You'll have learned how to hide it, just so you can have some friends. University is a place where it's okay to be nerdy, more or to party. If you do geography, because you've got lots of choice still, haven't you? You're deciding now what you're going to do next year. If you do geography, you will get lectures like this, where somebody puts up loads of graphs at you. I could have done my standard lecture, which is lots of pretty pictures and maps. which I like doing, but it would have been a lie, because that's not what you would actually get at university every day. You get weird people with ideas talking to you. The one advantage of geography is that you can look at anything and how it's connected. The one disadvantage is it doesn't kind of come with that great kudos of saying, I'm a doctor, I'm a physicist, I'm a historian. But we've almost managed to limit the damage caused by the last Prime Minister, Leader of the Opposition, and Catherine Blakelock, who I'm so glad you do not know who Catherine Blakelock is. Thank you very much for your attention.
Maybe
we could do, yeah, we could do a couple of questions.
Does anyone have a question?
Be brave.
You do, you know you do.
Yes.
In terms of the UN publishing statistics on population growth, has there been any kind of study into what that actually has an effect that has, presumably if you say people, there's going to be loads of kids, people actually might think overall lots of kids. Has there been any kind of research into that?
There has been, not on that. The biggest sort of suspicion is that the UN demographers know that the real number's going to be lower. But they're partly keeping the number higher. But they're slightly constrained because they have to agree with national governments. They're partly keeping it higher. To put it really crudely, the United States spends a lot of money on aid that goes to other countries. Part of that aid spending is free condoms. If the United States believes that world population is going to be 10 or 11 billion people, it'll carry on providing free condoms around the world until one group in the US gets to power and says, that's evil, you can't do condoms, which is a major worry. And then Bill Gates and Melinda pay for them. But it sounds trivial, but one argument I've been told several times is that the UN demographers know we're probably going to be less. But all the effort that goes in to make it easier for young women to get contraception in countries where it's really, really hard would be reduced if we didn't have panicking politicians. So those kind of, that's I think the biggest reason going. You get an enormous amount of people saying they're not going to have children to save the planet. Why, the circles I move in, a lot of young women tell me they're not going to have children to save the planet. Of which my default answer is, have a child who becomes a climate change activist. Because that single child, I mean, think you could call her Greta. It's been done, but there is no relationship between number of people and pollution. A few people pollute very highly, most people don't. One person who not only changes their own behaviour but argues about changing other behaviour, which includes saying don't build a new road, is far more effective than that person not existing. But I think there has been an effect of a generation of people worrying about having people at all, thinking it will hurt the planet. It won't, as long as they don't go shopping in New York every weekend. Last one. Anything at all?
Well, you said that most people say that the annual population is 5 billion, but what would you personally say would be the annual population?
What would I do? We could get up to 15 or 20 billion people if they behave really, really well. There's enough space for them. It means everybody eating vegetables, no cows being eaten. Or we could get down to just 2 or 3 billion people, but if they behave selfishly, it'd be too many. So I'm kind of quite happy with 10 or 11. I think it'll be good. The other thing which is going on is that people are concentrating faster and faster into cities. So there's now more and more wilderness every year. The countryside's being abandoned in the world. There are bears coming back into the Ural Mountains. So the future that you'll get to see if it carries on like this is you'll almost certainly live in a big city. And you're lucky because you're used to living in a big city. You're in a small minority of people in the world. You actually get to live in a mega city that's got good sanitation. Right? Most people in the world will get what you've got now. And they will live at quite high density, heating up their city with their own urban heat island, not using a car, because why would you have a car here? It doesn't make any sense, you can't park it, using public transport. And occasionally going out, not flying, but going out another way into the wilderness that's been abandoned. and reduce because people don't want, and you can see it in Japan. In Japan, Tokyo is 30 million, absolutely stable, it's not changing at all now. And you have abandoned farmland and woodland around Japan that you can go and see. Michael Gove has talked about abandoning all farming north of the Severn Wash Line come the 31st of October. So I don't think you're going to get rewilding that fast. But yeah, my ideal is 10 or 11 billion people that squeezed into smaller cities, higher density, with a lot of freedom over what you do, and a very low carbon footprint for each person, which does mean living in apartments, not houses, so you're sharing the heat with everybody else around you, and not having each having a garden. And the English have a particular problem with gardens. They think a garden's, you know, that's what they really want. But a garden in London is wasteful, and also, unless you really, really like gardening, it's actually a bit of a pain. And the last thing I'll say about gardens, just to end on, parents always want to get houses with gardens because they say the children will play in the garden. But what always happens is they put a trampoline there and you play a little bit with the trampoline, but what you actually want to do is go and find other children. And there aren't other children in your garden with the fence around it. The other children are somewhere else. And that's the kind of change you need, of weeding people away from things that don't actually make them happy, that they think make them happy, but which use up space where somebody else could be living in London in that space. And the more people we have living in London, if we do it carefully and cleverly and sort out the transport, the less is the overall carbon footprint, because you're far better behaved than people living in rural Oxfordshire, because a teenager in rural Oxfordshire has to be driven everywhere, otherwise they get bored out of their heads. So you want a world in which teenagers can actually be living in parts, places where they can get by themselves to other places without having to do it with a car. And that might seem obvious to you in London, but you have to work out how for the rest of the planet and the rest of the world you do it. Thanks for letting me waffle on.